Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Thank you for being with us today. My name is Silvia Sandrone from Creative Europe Desk Italy Media, based in Turin. I would like to wish you a warm welcome from all the Creative Europe Desk network, which is a huge network and which is very well represented today, thanks to my colleagues from Germany, Denmark, Finland, Lithuania, Portugal, Sweden, and the Netherlands. So thank you for joining us as well. As you might already know, our mission, the main mission of the Creative Europe Desk Network is to inform professionals in our countries about financial and networking opportunities offered by Creative Europe. And in particular, of course, Creative Europe Media, which is, funding the audiovisual industry. But we also try to organize initiatives and events in collaboration with, of course, desks from other countries in order to facilitate networking, partnership, matchmaking. And also our aim is to promote events and initiatives funded by Creative Europe Media Program. That's why I'm very happy to introduce you. Our guest will be part of this fishbowl conversation dedicated to artificial intelligence today. And a big thank first to Michel Ziegler, from the director of New Image Festival based in Paris, France, because she was, the idea came from her. So thank you again, Michel. Then Kirsty van der Plas, she's head of Immersive Impulse Program and also Immersive Tech Week in the Netherlands. And then last but not least, Astrid Kamke, head of European Creators Lab. So thank you all. Maybe would you like... Please, if you would like to say, just to introduce yourself, and then
we will... Hello, everybody. Thank you, Sylvia, for having us. My name is Michel Ziegler. I'm director of New Images at Forum des Images in Paris. We are like the cool basement in Paris, right in the center, but underground, where we have three screening rooms and a center for creative technology, where all year round we show cinema, but also gaming and immersive content. And as New Images, you might know us because we have a co-production, like a development market, a distribution market, conferences, and of course our competition. And I'm very happy to be here today. So thank you all for coming and joining.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again for coming and joining. My name is Kirsty van der Plas, and I head up the Impulse Program for Immersive Tech Week, which is an annual festival in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, this year taking place, just a quiet plug, from the 27th to the 2nd of December. The Impulse market is the funding market, which we do in conjunction with IFFR, New Images, XR for Europe, and Stereopsia. So, if you've got any questions, please come and ask. But that's the part that I do. And VR Days has three sort of main verticals, which is business, science, and art. And it's a four-day festival across all of those topics. Thank you.
Please, Astrid.
So hello, my name is Astrid Kamke. I'm based in Munich. I'm running the European Creators Lab since 2017. And the Creators Lab has a mission. We want to explore together with our participants from all over Europe and the world, together with our international mentors, how to tell stories in immersive media. And we are not so much tech-focused on VR. We are using really literally everything which is immersive. And we started this year in Lyon with a development lab that's already finalized. We're heading next week to Luxembourg with a residency and selected 11 international projects for that. And we will have a prototyping lab in October in Leipzig, and the call is open until next Sunday, I guess. And Mess Dempsbo is the head of studies of the European Creators Lab.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Astrid. Yes, and before diving into the fishbowl, we will. I'm very happy that Mats Damso, our guest, and also part of the team in European Creators Lab, accepted our invitation to make a keynote for us. Mats Damso is a creative producer and technologist, and he has created a creative agency in Copenhagen, Macropole. They also have a project here at the Venice Gap Financing. It's a feature-length immersive drama, An Empty Seat. And I would like to underline, above all, that Matsbo has been working with artificial intelligence tools for the last years. So, I mean, he's really, we are very happy that you are with us today. Before I leave my seat, which will be the empty seat, and maybe we will have two,
I will explain that.
I would like to thank you, my colleagues from Turin, Sara Bellinazzi and Francesca Messina, who are my partner in crime. So I hope that this experimental panel fishbowl conversation will be successful, but in case you have to complain to us. And of course, with my colleagues from the other Creative Europe desk, we will be available to meet you these days in Venice. We also have a slot for Meet the Chats on Sunday at the Hotel Excelsior in the afternoon, so please come to visit us. So thank you, and I give the floor to Mats. Just one maybe practical thing, please do not take pictures of images that will be screened during the keynote, right, Mats? Okay.
Yes, hi everyone, and I'm so glad to be invited. Oh yeah.
Thank you.
What I'm about to share now on the screen behind you, and for those that are sitting in the wrong direction, I'm very sorry. You can hear my voice. You don't need to look at my back, so you can turn around. It's quite a sensitive project that still isn't completely cleared all the way around in some regards, so I really ask you and urge you not to take any pictures or recordings. This will be, whatever happens in this room will stay in this room, and hopefully the conversation is something we can all take with us from this room. And I hope that this talk will not be a sort of attempt at being an expert on anything, because I think we all know that these technologies are moving at a very fast pace. So there might be people in this room that have another experience or more to say, and that's why this fishbowl concept, I think, is very interesting, because you'll all be allowed to join the conversation after this little keynote in a way that will be explained in a second. Yeah. Cool. So my question that I'm bringing to the table is an AI an advanced tool? Is it a creative collaborator, or can we even see it as an independent author or storyteller? And I want to start off with a little test for everyone. If you look at the screen now, you'll be able to see some quotes, and I'll just go through them slowly. What's interesting about these quotes is that half of them are by the filmmaker Werner Herzog, and the other half are by an AI that we trained to be Werner Herzog. I want you to see if you can see the difference. I can tell you that no one can actually find out exactly, not even Joe Beany, Herzog's own editor, could see the difference. So in 2016, Werner Herzog basically said, a computer will not make a film as good as mine in 4,500 years. And I was very compelled by this question. And at the time, I was working with a film director, Piotr Winiewicz, and he said, why can't we make a film as good as Werner Herzog? Who is to say that that's not possible? He's very skeptical, but we asked him anyway. And it wasn't an easy ask, to say the least. This is when the director asked Herzog. You may see some nervousness in his young debutante eyes. But Herzog said, yes, you may, go ahead. Feed it with my albino crocodiles on Paleolithic art and films about Caspar Hauser and whatever. I think artificial intelligence is going to fail. So you're doomed, basically. Yes. So we started the process of collecting data, was basically collecting all his films, transcribing them, all his books, articles, interviews, anything we could get our hands on that we could find that was about, that had been written by or spoken by Werner Herzog. His master classes were also taken down from online, etc. Even books that were his favorite books were also ingested into, at that time, GPT-2, which was, yeah, the predecessor to GPT-3. And one night in, was maybe a year and a half ago, while all the data had been cleaned, it took many months, our machine learning engineer was sitting with the fine-tuned system of GPT-2, and he said, and he was like, okay, now I can test it. And he didn't know, he was sitting late at night, and he said, well, I need to test it with something. And so he just wrote the word something. And out came a little script, you can say, that looks a little bit like this. So the title of the film, About a Hero, comes directly from this second sentence in this script. About a hero dreaming up surprisingly ordinary dreams. And there were a lot of interesting patterns in the script. You could recognize Herzog's voice, his thematics, speaking about dreams and other sort of frantic, chaotic things and poetic ways of putting words together. And we were quite immediately inspired to visualize what the script had described, just to see what it would look like as a film. So we took 9 films from the public domain, including some of Werner Herzog's own films, and we built an AI that could then match the text to images, so the script would be somehow one-to-one matched. And the AI made a sort of first version of the film. We also wanted the sort of very iconic voiceover that you know from Werner Herzog. So we also worked with a very amazing company called Respeecher in Ukraine that are still working today and working hard to stay alive and train a model to sound like him. This was the first model and that we have. We have had better later, but I'll show you this film now, or some of it.
It is possible that in keeping with the film's theme of personal imagination, we are to be told that this is a movie about a hero dreaming up surprisingly ordinary dreams. This is a dream captured in a movie, but what drives this dreamer? What is the connection between the dreams we have in this real world, the realm of the dreamer?
Yeah, it goes on and on. There was some quite I think, exciting moments in the script. One of them being that it resembled Herzog, but it also alluded to the fact that it might know it was an intelligent machine. This might be my own sort of conspiracy, but one of the quotes were, "We are like you in our cells. Our code is embedded in your bones." And that gave me the chills for some reason. But it also alluded to a lot of different thematics and characters and places that didn't exist, like the town of Gelsenkirchenburg, which we later realized is going to be the main arena of the film. And we then started, because it's not like pushing a button and it just writes a script, right? You have to interrogate, investigate, figure out what it's talking about. And so Piotr and the story producer, Anna Juhl, sat down and started a process of waterfalling with the script. And so basically asking it more about the characters and locations, what might have happened, and getting more and more information that then curated into a script. I'll just show you a couple of pages from the script. What you see in red is what's been written by Kaspar, what we call our AI, named after Kaspar Hauser, the enigma of Kaspar Hauser. And as you can see, we had to also give some continuity, so we help glue the film together using sort of classic manuscript techniques. But 90% of the film is written by Kaspar. And so in the end, it came up with this story. After Doram Clary supposedly commits suicide in despair over losing his job to a machine, Werner Herzog travels to Gelsenkirchenburg to investigate his perplexing death, but Herzog, the narrator of the film, is not who he seems, and the film is not what we expect. So, okay, so this is the film we gotta make. So how do we make a film with an AI? I think one of the questions we receive the most, and to be honest, we still receive this question. Where does the AI stop and the human begin? What is you? What is the machine? How can I believe that you are actually just doing what the machine is saying? And will there be a human touch in this film? Or is it cold? Will it be written and will this sort of synthetic-ness shine through? And so we had to set up a couple of dogmas. I will run through these quickly because we don't have time to sort of dive into them. But the dogmas are that the intervention of the human is solely to create better coherence in the narrative, that humans will film the script to the best ability and follow the script of Kaspar. These are some of the descriptions that we created using AI of locations and some of the moods that we had as we were in pre-production. Using different tools that you know of, might know of, like Midjourney and other tools. Interviews can be improvised if the script doesn't provide a full transcript, so we can improvise based on the descriptions that are in the script. And of course, at all times, can the humans ask Kaspar to generate extra scenes and dialogues, so that if we don't have a complete comprehensive idea of the scene, we can do that on the spot while in production. And I think importantly, we're going to process or document the process entirely with a B camera so that we can actually explain in the film what's going on. And this means that, you know, the film will not be 100% synthetic. It will be interwoven with how is this being received by actors, how are the makers thinking about it, and what are the ethical and moral complications that we should discuss on higher levels while making this kind of film. And Kaspar also was asked to do a rule. I think he has the most fun of them. I also hope it will be a new language for cinema. And we feel very endeared to this little Herzog butt that we're working with. It even gives interviews, actually, if you want to talk to it. So the film that we are making about a hero is in production now and has been bought by international broadcasters, and so it will be made and released next year. And that's why I can now show you some of the pilot that that is this film. And I'll do that now.
Burg. Gettingkirchen Burg. So it's not a real town?
It's not a real town.
Okay, okay.
But can I hear the...
Gettingkirchen Burg.
All right. Okay. I'm ready here. And action.
We are now in the town of Gettingkirchen Burg, a place of undetailed whereabouts and global insignificance. I think it's because I'm thinking about him.
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
And he has a certain way of doing, and it's...
Okay, and then don't worry about your own voice if it sounds different than his.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. Let's try again. Action.
We're now in the town of Gettingkirchen Burg, a place of undetailed whereabouts and global insignificance. Here, in 1919, a local entrepreneur built the first radio transmitter manufacturing plant. Now, 100 years later, although the factory has caught up with time and produces highly advanced technology, the life of this little town still revolves around the ghosts of the past. Upon my arrival, I could sense the peculiar mixture of misery and mystery. This was further enforced by the perplexing death of one of the factory workers by the name of Dorim Clary.
Hello?
Hi, good morning. This is your personal assistant. Do you need help?
The washing machine is calling with a musical ringtone to let you know it's finished. The dryer is so quiet that you can hardly hear it. The flushing toilet has a built-in sensor and adjusts the water.
Okay, this is where I'm going to cut off the pilot, just because there are also time is of the essence. So, coming back to the initial question, whether Kaspar is an advanced tool for creative expression or that it in itself is an independent author, I have to admit that that is exactly what we don't know when setting out to do this film. And in many ways, that's what we want the film to ask of you to consider. Hopefully, when you watch it, you will be seduced by the story, by the voice, by the narrative, and maybe you'll ask yourself if you feel that that's okay or not. Because I think in the time where we are going to be surrounded more and more by synthetic narratives, we should know where we stand in that context. And if you're confused, then I can comfort you with the fact that you're probably not the only one, and that's why we're also here together. But last little detail from the ending of our pilot.
Hang on. The script is written by artificial intelligence, or is it the story that artificial intelligence writes a script?
Ah! I think artificial intelligence is going to fail. All right, best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really, really exciting. So now we come to the...
Can I just say one last thing? If you want to follow the film, I'm just leaving this QR code up here so that you can take a picture of.
Okay, thank you. So the next part is going to be audio recorded, just so you know. So whenever you speak, please just say your name and who you are. So the fishbowl conversation, how did we get there? As we now mentioned a few times, this is a topic where, it makes us all scream at some point, like, which way does it go? And when we were approached to talk here with Astrid and Kirsty, we were like, we are no experts, like nobody is, and how do we only have questions. And it made me think of the feeling that you have and that I had a few times now by listening to you was, oh, I have something to say, or I have a question, or maybe I have this and this to share. So the fishbowl conversation is where we have two empty seats where you at any point can walk up, take the seat, take the microphone, and in a civil manner, of course, ask your question or share. Yeah. Still, this is a safe place. So we chose this really because we're all nervous, and it's a topic that makes us nervous, and so really, I'm inviting you to participate. Keep the conversation going, but respect the point of view of others, respect yourself also. But it might sound funny and obvious, but just to be sure that if you feel insecure, or if you feel like, oh, I don't feel like I can ask this question. No, you're wrong. We're exactly here to, we probably don't have the answer. But it's good to share this, together. So I think that we are here until 1:30. So we will, I will make a little sign before we wrap up. So, again, we start the discussion now. Whenever you have a question or you want to share your own experience, as we said, there is no expert at the moment. If you want to add something to the conversation, come, walk up, sit down, take the mic, participate. If every chair is taken, there's these two empty chairs, or that might be occupied. Please just stand next to it, so it signals to the person that is occupying the chair that they wrap up and change. There we go.
Fantastic. Can I kickstart the process with two questions, one for the audience and one for Mads? Can I get a show of hands as to who is actually using AI tools in the creative process right now? Oh, this is going to be a good conversation. This will be fantastic. Firstly, Mads, thank you so much. That was fantastic. I also think your timing is impeccable, that you got greenlit just in time to come and, yes. and discuss
that wasn't
this.
Planned, though.
It was incredibly handy for us. It's a fabulous project, and I'd like to start with a difficult question, or maybe not so difficult, about transparency. What are your thoughts around it? When do you need to say something's been created by an AI and when something hasn't? Do you need to say it? It's a big question, but I'm assuming you've thought about it quite a lot.
Yeah, I think I think we're all struggling with this in some ways when, you know, there's this classic example of the girl with the pearl earrings that came out, where if you Google it, you find an AI-generated version of it with light bulbs instead of pearl earrings. And it is a pollution of reality that's happening, and I think we're already at a state where it's like it's unstoppable that we're going to be surrounded by synthetic content, and of course there's going to be some kind of watermarks or some gatekeepers or some regulations that will step in to sort of try to manage this. But when you make a film, that is such a complex layer of competencies that all go together, there really isn't a strict boundary, even though we have dogmas, and the dogmas will be included in the film. So you'll know as the audience, oh, okay, so this is how the process was made for them. There's still a lot of gray zones of when something was the machine and something was the human. And I think that's also the point of the film, is to maybe look at it from a perspective of a creative collaborator, right? That if you go into a state of co-creation with the machine and let it speak on its sort of own terms, and you then also with your humanness, you can say, curate and work with it, then something beautiful can happen in between you. And maybe you can then ask the question, is that what happened in between you? What is that then? Is that the machine or is it human? Maybe it's a combination, and maybe that's fine. So I think we won't be able to define it clearly. We will try to do, like you saw, the text written in red will be appearing from time to time in the film. So you'll have the sense of, oh, this is what was written, this is what I see. But you know, when you pick up a camera, when you cast someone, when you direct them on the spot, this is not something that the AI can do. In theory, it could maybe down the line, but that's not what we're doing. So there's a lot of humanness in the film in the end.
I have a question. How do you, if you say it's a collaborator, do you also teach it up front in the sense of, because you've fed it a lot of to resemble Van Herzog, but like the whole strict rules, for example, about American cinema, this is how a storyline has to go. Is this anywhere going in there or not at all?
Well, not other than that it read the screenplays that Herzog did, and so in that sense it has some idea of structure, but I think the main issue with the large language models we have is that they don't really have that sort of overreaching narrative understanding, so it becomes more of a curational, like we end up being the ones that put it in place to create a story. But that being said, we do release the AI at some point in the film without spoiling. We let it go to some extent, and sort of it goes on a rant.
Hi, Avinash from We Make VR. I wanted to add to your question in terms of transparency. When are you transparent? When you use AI tools, we're doing a project called The Saga of Sage, which is episodic storytelling across different media. So we're using VR, we're using graphic novels, and et cetera, et cetera. In the graphic novels that we're creating, the AI tool is actually a partner. We enter into a dialogue. So what you were saying, Matt, in terms of doing the waterfall process, inquiring the AI and doing a deeper dive, that's actually what helped us to develop these stories. And for audiences, currently, I would say, in the state of using AI as a collaborator, it's actually really helpful to be transparent, because it creates awareness about what is possible with AI. And it also, at least in our experience, has unlocked a little bit of the dialogue in the creative sector on AI. Because the question, and that was actually a question I had for you, Mats, so for us it's been beneficial in our process, but you've developed a lot of experience in developing with Casper, and in learning about harnessing the power of AI in general. So will, in your opinion, having that experience, knowing how to harness AI in your creative process, create a divide between in the creative industry, between the creators, the makers that do not know how to program, do not know how to use AI, versus the ones that do, or vice versa. Will the power of AI and having the tools that it offers, instead of it being positioned as a collaborator, enable the people that don't know programming to still use AI as a creative tool and visualize the things that they have in their mind but were never capable of because they didn't have the tools? So will it divide or will it empower?
Yeah, good question. I really think that there's also a question of time in this, where right now it is a democratizing tool. Everyone can, in theory, jump on the OpenAI platform now and start playing around. So we're in a time of like complete freedom to use these large language models. Who is to say what's going to happen in a year or two from now when maybe some of these models are forced to retrain or they become very expensive because they're running on really expensive processing servers, and so it's only for the people who can afford it, or, you know, so there's questions about division in that sense, where there might be some people are excluded. I really hope not. I hope that we will find a way to release base models that can be then trained individually by artists. I hope Europe comes along and also, picks up the slack and actually runs or starts training language models in their cultural context. So hopefully we'll see it. This is what I think. I mean, I don't know, but I think that we'll see a lot more different models come out, and then creatives will have to be aware that if they want to superpower their creative development, they have to use and choose some kind of model for whatever task they have, and aware of what are these models trained on and what specifically are they giving them and why. And even, I think, bridging that information and awareness to the audience, saying, you know, this is the source of our creative collaboration. Similar to like, well, I see this artwork, what is the backstory of this person? It has a lot to say of how I perceive the art. Right, so the same kind of awareness should spill over to the audience, I think. Hopefully that will create a non-divide, in a sense.
I hope so. If I may, can I ask another question?
Oh, okay. One more.
All right, because then I'll open up the chair for someone else. So you also mentioned, or in your slides, seeing AI as a new language in cinema. We saw this same conversation in the early days of 360 film, as in, is this a new empowerment, a new way of film? And what we've seen in the past 8 years, it's that it didn't become a subset of cinema. It became its own language. It's a medium in its own right. I would argue that AI creativity, not just film, but AI in general, will open up a completely new independent domain of creative works and not a subset of cinema. Thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that I'm just concerned about the cinema question because this is a cinema film, but it will change. I mean, it will disrupt all domains in some way. I think what's really important here is the where is it coming from? When I think about the texture and the feeling and the emotion that I get from interacting with an AI, what I get is actually this alien feeling that it has something to say that I don't think necessarily humans can say. There's some of it that it seems alien to me, and I would like us to take that seriously as like another entity in itself has something to say. It might be our collective consciousness, basically, repurposed into these words, but it might also be that plus more that no person is able to accumulate by themselves. So that to me is super fascinating, that we might just have like this otherworldly author that can say things about ourselves that no one else could have said.
I want to continue on this because
I'll free up the seat.
Thank you, Avinash.
Thank you.
Because I watched an experience last night that's here on the island. It's Tulpamansa, and it's completely built with AI, and I strictly recommend to watch it. And I would love to see Aaron, if you're ready for it, to join us here. Aaron is the technical director. Matthew is sitting here. So for those who haven't experienced yet, this piece is, I just briefly say it in one sentence, that piece is completely based on artificial intelligence. It asks you some questions you need to typewrite the answers. It's ChatGPT-4 or something else. And after 10 minutes or a few questions or so, very personal questions, actually. And the more you give in, the more you input into the machine, the more you get out of it. You've been asked into a second room. And in real time, Stable Diffusion worked on that text into images, into Unity Build, into a VR experience. And that blew me away yesterday, so we had a very long conversation last night. Thank you for that. And I want to give you the voice, Rad.
No pressure.
Yeah. Well, I can talk about it.
Tulpamancer is the word.
Yeah, I think to follow on what was said earlier, Tulpamancer, I think, represents one of the new modes that AI is enabling, right? Where there's, you get this, I think it's maybe like 1,000, 1,200 word voiceover from the AI recounting an interpretation of your memories and your childhood and your future. And all of that is made on the spot based on what you say. And I think this, like, you know, we've had this sort of in games previously where, you know, you create stories on the fly, but here it's almost different where the places that you are and the topics that you're encountering and the ideas that are being presented are all just pulled from the ether and then erased as soon as you're gone. So there's sort of like an ethereal aspect to it where what you get is so special and specific to that time and place and individual.
Is there a special idea behind that, why you started that experiment? Well, how come that you were thinking on your sofa, oh, let's do that someday? were there an ignition that started the project?
This is definitely... I was approached by Matthew and Mark, who have been doing a series of AI works. And if I could sum it up, it feels like there's... You know, almost as I was just saying, there's a new modality that is available to us now. I think all the tools that we're using are just now hitting a point where they can be used in this way, in terms of, you know, how quick they are, how easy they are to access, how robust they can be. So I think Tulpamancer represents sort of the very edge of capability that we could do with AI today. And I think presenting that to an audience lets us ask, you know, the world this question of, like, what does this mean for us? What does this mean to you? How do you feel about what AI is capable of? And how does that contribute to the way that you think about its future?
Is there anybody who has not yet tried AI, like generative AI? Never? Yeah? May I ask you why?
I was not interested. Now I'm interested. Yeah, because I use it, I mean, I'm engaged in art education,
yeah,
and my students use it to generate arts, and I just follow it because it kind of starts to be also in the school.
Yes.
School, so it's interesting to me how this tool, you were talking about the tool, how we kind of can, which impact we can give to this tool, because I think tool is a tool. In 19th century, impressionists could paint with the oil. Before, it was not possible, so they started to move in landscape. Now we have a tool which is like based on the, and we will discover new contents which we develop, so I see it as a art tool.
We have a Center for Creative Technologies where we have informed des images with teenagers who come starting from 12 years on and learn how to use game engines and to create films and do animation. And their question was exactly that. Okay, where does an AI art piece start, and where does AI as a tool end? So in your case, for me, if I had to answer or to explain it to one of our teens, I would say this is an AI art piece. And here maybe it's in between. So it's like, how do you feel about that? How would you answer? Is that correct? Or
yeah, I would totally agree. I think those are the two sides of the capabilities that we have now, and I think we definitely see a lot more of the tooling side, I think, in the discussion nowadays with ChatGPT and the images that you're talking about with like Midjourney and DALL-E and now Adobe Firefly or whatever it is, and it's important to really think about both of them.
So when we take it this way, how would you, for the using of AI in your case with the students, what would you tell her to? What to experience? What she has, because she is forming the future creators, right? So.
Yeah, I'm just thinking.
So I have a question later.
Yeah. I recently talked to a professor who's teaching architecture, mm-hmm. who has been exploring the same problem, and from what I can tell, their approach was to learn alongside the students, mm-hmm. and I personally find it difficult to see any other way to approach this problem, partially because the speed, especially on the visual art side, of which this technology is evolving, is unbelievable, like breakneck. Like every month there's something that's groundbreaking and totally brand new.
I mean, I don't see it as a problem, but I see it as a something which we have to take care of. Like, I see it as a really a tool, as possibility, as, yeah.
I think it's important when you're a teacher, and you are trying to at least give some kind of preparation for the future for your students, is that to acknowledge the fact, like you were saying, that this is a exponential acceleration that is happening. I mean, and I think we have a hard time sometimes coping with that concept as humans, because we don't live in an exponential world. We live in a linear world that has a linear progression. But if you stick your head in it and you actually see, and I think there are technologists here in the room that would confirm, it's as if every day something you thought could never be done can now suddenly be done, right? And that can take the breath out of anyone. So if you're then teaching, I would really recommend that you start thinking about some of the higher level questions. About originality, about taste, about subjectiveness, phenomenology, what makes us human. You know, these questions are going to be universally important, even though AI can do everything we can do.
And this question comes also.
Sorry to interrupt. Could you please, as we are audio recording, mention
yes.
your name before
yes.
you talk? So we.
My name is Tamar Skirtladze. I am artist and director, and I just came just because I'm interested in these topics, which we have immersive. And I have one question to you and one to you, because you did, as I understood, installation which is like live generated. Okay, there something happens which happens in process. And you did the film where you kind of started to find, you know, you took Werner Herzog. How it would be if you would take content which is purely your, let's say, your content, your subjective content.
My
all
own.
This, yes, your own.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a big difference if you give an information to information which is around, a lot of people know, you know, and there is information which comes from you as a personal.
Yeah.
What would change in... Yeah.
I think it wouldn't...
How do you think?
May I add something on this point?
Yes, sure.
It's just related to your question. My name is Stefano Casertano. I'm a film director and VR creator. My project is in the section Biennale College VR. It's called Days of the March. We talk about inventing a new language of cinema. We've seen that fantastic piece of imitation. So how do we match being new with imitating? Because, yeah. If we refer to... You know, the passage to the industrial age. And if we quote Walter Benjamin, so the work of art in the age of its mechanical reproducibility, we are now in an age where we can not just reproduce, but imitate to the infinite. Mm. So maybe the impact is more on the non-AI art, because we will have to react to the fact that everything can be imitated and reproduced and churned out and out and over and over again. That's it.
Yeah. So I think to answer the question, if you only train something on yourself, right, then you get yourself. But any artist knows that you steal like an artist, right? You are inspired, you process, you see, you choose and you sometimes steal what you like and you bring it into a new context and you put yourself in that as well. And so that becomes an original work. I think that when you see a film like this, it's not an imitation because it can never be. It can be retrospectively, of course, very colored by the films that it saw or like the screenplays it read. But in the end, it's collaborating with humans to make something that is completely new. And so what I mean by the new language of cinema is not that I think that that it will sort of make up this whole new language we haven't seen before, but that it will open something in our creative inspiration that we haven't seen before.
Okay.
On this point, sorry.
May I just interrupt because I want to bring Kirsty and Michelle back into the space. Thank you. And you haven't said anything. But if it's a question for Mess, yes. Maybe we can put it afterwards, okay. Because otherwise it's a Mess interview. Otherwise, I'm sure we have a lot of questions here in the space. I didn't want to interrupt. You can ask, but it should be an open.
Yeah.
And bring it back to the.
But
AI
I think you can answer it too. So maybe I'll answer your ask you a question. So my name is David, and I'm a writer. Just to go back a little bit to the basics, because I think there's a little bit of confusion. What is the difference? I have two questions for you, and I'll ask them one after the other, and then I'm done. So the first one is: what is the difference between AI, machine learning, and algorithms? You know, because I know it's not the same thing, and I think there's a little bit of confusion in some people. And the second thing is, and this is tied to, I didn't catch your name, sorry, about the oil paint. Algorithms are not oil paint because they were created, and I don't know what is the priority of an algorithm. Like, it's called algorithm bias that I don't know. So the algorithm that was written that says, if I ask, for example, an algorithm, why did the Second World War happen? I mean, the algorithm will give me an answer, will prioritize what that answer will be, and I hope he's agreeing with me why the second, but there is no, it depends on how it was programmed. So it's not oil paint, it's something a little bit more different. Even if it's a tool, it's not quite a tool, because behind the tool there is a language, there's a code that decides the priorities. So this film could have been completely different if the algorithm was written in a different way. So these are my questions. Thank you.
It's frustrating because all three of those words are very broad and cover many aspects. I can start with algorithms. I think algorithm just refers to any process that has been created with like some sort of intent. Like, you know, if you think about long division, that's an algorithm that we learn in grade school. AI is a general term for anything that pretends to even approach to be sentient, right? Like anything that can come up with, and we've had discussions about AI since, oh, who knows when, the 30s, the 1800s, you know, crank wheel AI. And then machine learning nowadays generally refers to the statistical models of deep learning where you have a giant black box of numbers that slightly adjusts itself every time you give it input to give you a certain set of numbers, and you do that 100 million times, and then you have something that sometimes behaves predictably. But in general, refers to anything where a computer can be told to do something a certain way and then start doing it that certain way. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. And then the bias, the algorithm. Like, there's a critique that there's nothing to do with objectivity. I mean, it's not something that gives you truth. It's kind of the priorities that an AI like ChatGPT, the code was written, but who
owns the truth? I mean, everyone has bias, so that I know exactly what you mean. So these machines are fit with data from the wide Western world in English. So if you try to translate Luxembourgish with ChatGPT, you fail, for example. So, and I think the same is for the other 6,000 languages. So it's really narrowing something down. Totally agreed. But I think that's something we cannot solve. So just being, create awareness for it, that pool of data, the tools we're using are just a small selection, representation of the world wisdom. And I want to add something because I'm reading Oliver Sacks as an obsession for years. And I went back to his book, River of Consciousness, and he's talking about creativity. And so now I lost it. That's Oliver Sacks. it's getting back. But it has, I come back with in a second. I just lost it. Sorry for that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
But that's exactly, as you say, it's at the moment bias is a thing. But that's why the awareness is so important. And that joins you from the beginning, like creating awareness, using, testing, experimenting. That's only how we can master the thing. Otherwise, if we do not use, if we just, you know, put it away.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. I have a question for any of the creators in the room. We've heard lots of fantastic stories about where AI has been incredibly helpful. Sorry to the people looking at the back of my head. Mm-hmm. But does anyone have a story about it being incredibly frustrating? Is it? Please come and join us, because I'm assuming it's incredibly difficult to learn how to write prompts accurately so you get what you want out of this system. Finally, I'm happy because spelling finally matters. As a spelling nerd, this makes me happy. But there must be times where you go, gee, I really wish that I was doing this the old-fashioned way. Can AI sometimes be the intern that hasn't got it yet?
I haven't got it yet. I mean, I I'm a creator. I make films and I do VR experiences. And my name is Gerda. And I theoretically am very interested in AI, but I can't even use ChatGPT properly. It always tells me, you can't do that, or this is against the rules. And I think this is lying here, this film, saying, yes, artificial intelligence, well, yeah, you can say anything about sex. No, you can't. And I'm creating something which is not pornography, but it's sort of on the border of pornography and eroticism, and their ChatGPT fails completely. And I think your experience is great, theoretically. When I see the images, I know this is not the room I grew up. And that is frustrating.
I mean, this is not, I feel, yeah, I see it as a piece of artificial intelligence, but it has nothing to do with me. And this is not, you know, and this is always, I have talked with friends who are really into that, and they showed me ChatGPT, and they showed me texts, and I find them extremely hollow, and I really,
In this case, it's really, really reassuring that it doesn't show you the room of your child.
Yeah, I feel like that's...
I would like to connect more to it, to the imagery. I mean, as I said to Matt, I would really like to go and see it again in a week and see how much the machine has learned and see if it's really different. But for me, I don't know quite what to do because I I'm trying to kind of formulate my questions in such a way that they work, but when I get the results, I think, okay, it's not for me somehow, but maybe one day I will get into it. I mean, the worst of it is in a week I have to be in Austria on a forum and talk about artificial intelligence, and I still don't know what to say. So, yeah.
It's cool. Already in your phone. It's going to talk to you next week. I'm Matthew, one of the creators of Tolbomancer, who's been working with Aaron. And I just wanted to quickly say that, you know, Tolbomancer isn't learning from what everybody is inputting and seeing. Everything is destroyed afterward. But it is a reflection of the most widely used tools in machine learning right now, which is essentially ChatGPT, Stable Diffusion, and we're using a text-to-voice called PlayHT, all tools that are available. There's a lot of special custom sauce in the background that creates a virtual reality experience within minutes, and that's in large part thanks to Aaron's work. But we imagined it as what is it going to mean to actually start having dialogues with machine learning, large language models. How do they want to try to get to know you? And then also through this experiment, showing their limitations, because it doesn't always ring true, of course, and the visuals are still very surreal in many ways. But it is foreshadowing these very personalized cinema, personalized podcasts, even personalized metaverses that will become more common, I don't want to say next year, but there's a drive toward this personalization of content and narrative.
Okay, but what is the difference now between what I have actually written into it, which you say you will destroy afterwards and destroy from everybody else, but the reflections of it? What's the difference between that?
I don't know. I mean, are we machines or are we, you know, humans? Is that a human? Is that a machine? I mean, we landed this project on Monday, and we're getting...
Personally, I have absolutely I personally have nothing against it, that you use what I put in there, and that I will be killed, I think, when I die, so I don't care if you use that or not. It's just, I find it interesting, for me, there is always, that's what I don't like in that, is the soft language, you know, when you say reflections of it. So what does that really mean? What is there? What is that?
So...
Just step in, because that's a point that really haunts me. Sorry, Matthew, that there's such a blurriness in definitions. We have no scientific definition of what is intelligence. So we're talking about human intelligence, but even that is not defined yet scientifically. So there's an animal intelligence, a plant intelligence, and we don't know what it is. We're talking about creativity, and McKinsey uses it in a completely different way as we would use the term creativity. So that blurriness makes that discussion really, really generic in a way. That's also something we should be aware of, that's a bit of, you know, word dropping when we use those words, what's really behind. And I completely agree with you, Gerda, that's all a bit in that field of blurriness.
I will add just one more thing and release my seat. But, you know, the large language model, we do know a lot about it. It is an amazingly complex probability machine that is trained on the corpus of our digital traces over the past 20, 30 years. And that's actually where the name Tolpa Mansur comes from. It's the idea that something has been manifested out of this corpus of digital, you know, detritus and everything we've done, and we can now talk to it in a strange way. And it is, I think, eventually going to be different for everybody, but the point of the piece, and Aaron said this earlier, is really to potentially unpolarize a lot of these issues about it. I mean, we could speak about nomenclature for a very long time in the first place to establish it, but we're hoping that it brings variety of thought and reaction. And your reaction was a powerful one. And, you know, we've had people being like, this was a confessional. This made me angry. This one made me cry. You know, it means so many different things for different people. And it's a challenging moment. And we're trying to ask that question now and definitely don't have answers. But so we
my
hope
last
you live.
Question to you is, if I come back in a week, will it be, and I give you exactly the same answers, will
be different
the imagery
every time.
Be different?
Every time.
Every time. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerda. You wanted to say something.
I wanted to jump off what you said, actually. My name is Nitai Dagan. I have like a film and philosophy podcast back in Tel Aviv in Israel, and I'm a VR creator and a writer. And now, while playing with AI, I realized that it's, like she said, it's like very general. And I wanted to ask you, and maybe like all of you guys, are we close to the point when we can make this general idea of AI, make it a perspective, like have ChatGPT have a specific perspective like or maybe resemble a human being? Because like the creator that said here before, he said like, I love the alienated feeling of interacting with AI. And I'm wondering how, if we're like close to the point where it can have a specific, maybe alienated, but specific perspective that he can play off of it and not evoke questions, just like have his own unique, weird perspective.
I mean, I think it plays into what I actually wanted to come up and talk about as well, in terms of what is intelligence and how do... And also for the live piece that you talked, that was talked about before, like how can it be more than just, you know, some words I typed in maybe, and then I go, I mean, I haven't tried this piece, but like go into the room and I see something, right? So first of all, my name is Nikolai Stausbill. I work with creative technology and have worked a lot with AI pieces, also for installations and stuff. And my point is, I think right now we look at tools that are in almost linear in themselves, like ChatGPT and all these tools, like we type with it, then we can branch out and we type something different, right? I think to basically give credit to the artificial intelligence, it's very hard for it to be intelligent about what we talk about when we don't communicate in many very good ways. We don't actually interface with it in many other ways than typing in with words. I mean, even in a live experience and stuff like that. And when we talk to each other, we interface in many more ways. And I think interface is usually used for digital interfaces, right? But it means to, you know, go through the barrier and communicate. So I think for us to expect that it has intelligence, we also need to interface with it in different ways. And I think that's a creative choice in the linear piece like Mess showed. You know, it will be, you know, how can they, you know, describe what they want in other ways than with words? And that will grow and that will change, and you can build tools and little, like, digital tools for that, like nudging the words, like how can we different way describe the atmosphere, but maybe it's also with body language or with hand movement and, you know, mimic it with our faces. And the same for live experiences, like how can you get these sentiments in so that there would be enough for an artificial intelligence to actually create, you know, something that feels then intelligent to you afterwards, because otherwise you didn't give it anything. That's my... It's more as an observation, and I think it's like that for me is what I'm waiting for and what I'm looking for. Like, I love looking for these interface tools, because I think that's what gets us the next level. Right now, everybody's like looking for the next model that makes it nicer, but the model doesn't get us closer to communicating to it what our intent was. So, and there will be many, many ways, right? And I think that's what will differentiate all the products.
Thank you, Stos.
I just want to say something brief. My name is Yair, professor of computer science in Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And also, I teach VR and XR. I just wanted to say something because I feel, you know, there was some criticism of the models and the AI tools today, and I think this criticism is correct, and we should accept it. And also, you know, I think I felt like maybe we should say something that people should feel fine if they are uncomfortable with the tools today. Because, you know, there's some confusion sometimes when we talk about artificial intelligence. We think about, you know, some kind of a machine that thinks like a human, right? But and there's some confusion because the tools today are so developed. They manage to create such amazing results that stun us in some ways. You know, the Midjourney and ChatGPT sometimes. But they still have their defaults and their problems, and they're not at that stage that they are acting like a human, and we have to remember that. So, you know, for instance, my own experience trying to create a story for a VR film for students, and, you know, it was quite frustrating, and I can relate to that frustration that people have, because we kind of expect it, you know, we'll give it a short prompt and we'll get the result that we want, but it's not going to happen. And it was a very frustrating process to keep telling it what we want. So we actually, you know, my prompt became almost the whole result.
It's an art of right. itself, that prompting, right? The prompt engineering or prompt design.
Exactly.
So is that a new skill to be learned?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. It's a skill to be learned. And also, you know, I mean, these things are going to develop, and next year we'll have tools that help us to do the prompt. But I'm guessing. But you know, but I feel like, you know, it's fun, and we have to know that this is the stage we're in, and we have to work at this and explain the AI what we want, and the explanation sometimes is like half the work. So that's all.
What's one?
I'll have to go.
And maybe I can pick up on that. I don't know. I mean, maybe I just want to challenge the whole situation here. But maybe learning how to prompt is something that we shouldn't do, because in 2 years' time it won't be necessary anymore. And I don't know if there's someone like scientists or other scientists in the room here, but I mean, there has been lots of discussion about how sentient actually, with the current models we're working on, AI actually can become. And there's lots of people also saying that we're kind of hitting a wall with the current models we're working on. We'll never become to a point where we actually can create something that, you know, is sentient or is actually something that we're talking to. And the example Mats was giving was, you know, was really right. I mean, he couldn't talk to the AI co-creating a script. That's what usually humans do. You know, there's a couple of writers, or maybe just Werner Herzog does it on its own. The other thing, I mean, does Werner Herzog get a credit? Does he get, you know, paid for, you know, his input in the script, maybe? And then I don't know if Werner Herzog would actually, you know, agree that this film is better than or achieved what he said could never have been done. I don't think so, that Werner Herzog would say that this film is better than his own films. And you know why? Because Werner Herzog loves his films and not other ones' films. And that's totally fine. Because you're talking about something very individual, very, you know, also talking about AI, you get a different thing, you know, every other time when you put something in, and that's of course frustrating, you know, because it's something like I talk to you, you know, how was your day?
Bad.
How was your day?
Good.
So it's not like that easy, but you know, that's some of the things with our human conception we're not used to, because our human communication is about reliability, and that's not reliable, and it's probably never going to be, and it's something we have to accept. But the question is really, I mean, I think the term AI is, as he said, a bit misleading.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are getting frustrated about the expectation and about the results and the hype, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for the word. Yeah.
This was a big conversation between the three of us when we were prepping for the panel. And I think, Astrid, it was your comment that there's so fueled by social media, there's such an emotional language around this. We weren't sure, is the tech moving faster than the conversation, or is the conversation moving faster than the tech? And then I think also there's a large cultural thing that we need to consider as well. I think the relationship that we have to something like technology, robotics, AI is different in Europe versus the US versus Japan, for example. Like there's so many nuances that can't be answered in a really simple thing. And I know you had some really strong thoughts about that. It's a difficult thing to unpack.
I just wanted to give my chair for another person, but like I feel it's fine. But I feel like as regarding to what you said, like is the conversation faster than the tech or not? I feel like for me, wanting to have AI collaborator who has an opinion about the stuff that I'm writing, it's maybe faster than the tech, just from my perspective. But also, I feel like trying to have this tool that does everything really fast and try to make it a creative tool, this is the boundary that it's like, I don't know when I feel it's a good thing and when I feel it's like too alienated to be a partner of my as a creator.
This is actually one of the three things that we wanted to give you away for while wrapping up is actually, stay on top of the tool, learn it, but also in order to be able to know, does it add value? So you know, not to just do something because of the hype, but yeah, master it, but in order to see whether the value is there.
And also to always start with the question, why? Why am I using this? Is there a reason? Is it because I want something to be easier for me? Is it because I want to learn something? Is it because I want a collaborator that is a machine? You know, to have a good understanding of why you're approaching something and why you're using a tool is imperative in the creative process.
That brings me back to Oliver Sacks. It came back. What I wanted to say is I read about his research as a medical, as a doctor, and he was researching literally in medical history. So he was going to libraries and reading books from the 16th century and stuff. And I was thinking, okay, this is definitely knowledge that is in no AI pool because it's not digitalized. So being aware that there's always a niche, or not a niche, that AI is the niche and the rest of the world is not being captured right now by these data makes us special. And it's always the artist behind the machine right now, in my opinion, that creates something. And we had a bit of a blurriness but that's totally okay because it's really a discussion, open discussion, between using AI as a tool for prototyping or for getting quicker to results, to some research, or using it as a collaborator, as an artistic partner, so to say, and these are two different things in my opinion, mm-hmm. And I would love to continue at some other event on that discussion because it's incredibly
important. That's exactly what we're going to do.
That's exactly what we're going to do. So this conversation will be continued at VR Days at the end of November, and then again at New Images.
24 to 28th of April, 2024.
So we do hope to see everyone there to see what's changed. Maybe we still have the same questions.
Yeah, my God. I wonder if I'm having the last word here, but I'm known as a Luddite to many people. And in all this discussion, what really struck me is that there is a conception that's not really dealt with, which is AI or whatever information is always coming from the past. There's nothing coming from the future, which would be really difficult, because we are not
based. We don't know yet. We don't know.
We don't really know that, but we perceive it that way. But that's the most important thing about it, because AI is also drawing from the past, because it's our collective memory. And therefore, the expectation that anything could come out of it that goes beyond our own collective consciousness ist, you know, es sprengt den das Feld, wie man so schön auf Deutsch sagt. It will, you know, tear the envelope apart that we are existing in. We haven't gotten to that point yet.
No.
And it would be interesting if that ever would happen, but I think that if it ever would happen, we would have a real hard problem understanding it. So there's a human natural limit to whatever is coming out of artificial intelligence, because either we will not be able to perceive it, because it's in the future that we are not able to experience, and whatever else we're drawing out of this is sort of a mashup of human experience. So come to think of it, what is this? It's a huge library that we're drawing on, and instead of, you know, spending years and years and years researching something, you're able to do this within a couple of seconds. And the better you're able to go through indexes and find what you're looking for and defining it in the final end, this is where artificial intelligence is really incredible. Because, you know, just imagine yesterday I was trying to think up a haiku for my uncle who was interned, and I was going to present something for the funeral. I put in a few keywords into ChatGTP or whatever it's called. It came up with the perfect haiku. Perfect. And I didn't tell the other people at the funeral that I actually didn't write it.
Your secret's safe with us, except because, this is being recorded.
You know, everyone's just totally blown away by it, you know? So that was great.
Yeah.
But what was I doing? I was drawing on a huge collection of haikus that have been collected for centuries, and that, you know, yeah. Chat was able just to come up with the right one. So, you know, being a Luddite for that matter, I'm saying this is a great tool, but it's only a tool, and it's only as good as the operator.
Yeah, and so we want to say, do not harm the user, like, do not, you know, that's also one thing.
So, oh, by the way, my name is Carl Haupt. I live in Germany. I'm from the U.S. I'm a film director and a film producer, so.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I think we are out of time, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. Unfortunately, because it was so really so interesting. And thank you so much for all your contribution. And happy to hear that we can maybe continue the discussion in the future. So do not hesitate to send your comments to our email. We will see also how to improve it. But there is a networking cocktail waiting for you. Honestly, we didn't expect so many participants, so the terrace might be a bit small, maybe, but I hope that you will be able to grab your drink and food anyway. What to say? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thanks, everybody, for the participation.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.